American songwriter, we had the opportunity to talk to Get Dead. My brother-in-law, Sean Olds of the Eiffels, was able to talk to Sam King of Get Dead over Zoom video. Sam tells us how the band was formed, grabbing the attention of Fat Mike of NoFX, and how the band eventually signed with Fat Records. Check out Get Dead's new album, Dancing with a Curse. And check out the interview with Sean Olds of the Eiffels and Sam King on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringin' It Backwards. And make sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Bringin' Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringin' It Backwards with Sam King of Get Dead.
Sam, what's going on?
What's up? How you guys doing?
Doing great, man. So, updating the old Zoom, huh?
Yeah, my bad. I keep going like in the studio in the garage and then putting one together here. So I have like the iPad, my phone,
totally,
no, desktop, no, and like no. One of them is always going cattywampus. So I apologize about that.
No worries at all. I was just hanging out. That happens to me all the time. I'm get on a new device and I'm like, oh, dude,
crazy.
Yeah. Hey, dude, now, where are you at right now?
I'm in my house in Campbell, California.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Where are you at?
So, I'm in Los Angeles right now.
Okay.
Hot day. Yeah, it is hot. So thanks a lot for joining us. I'm stoked to hear the story of Get Dead, because it sounds like an interesting one. So why don't you take us just all the way back? You know, like when how'd you get into music?
My grandma used to teach piano. So we always had a piano in the house. That's how I got into music. And then as far as like my musical tastes that followed me, same way that a lot of people, you know, skateboarding, skate videos, you know. So that's why I think that it's like I've got the mix of I listen to more like hip-hop music than I do punk rock music. But I still listen to them both. I just like the other one more. But it's just from skateboarding and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Growing up, being a derelict.
Right. So around what age did you start, so you had piano lessons, like a lot of musicians, they start on the piano and then you're skateboarding. So you're hearing like rad music in videos and maybe, you know, playing it while you're skating. But was there a point, did you grab a guitar at some point? Like how old were you when you actually maybe picked up the microphone or a guitar or something like that?
When I was a little kid, my grandma used to like up in Mendocino, she would like put me in, you know, the town plays and stuff to dress me up like Oscar the Grouch once. And I had to pop out a trash can and sing I Love Trash. And my grandma filmed it. And my grandma still has that video. You know,
nice.
That's the one that comes out to embarrass, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but when I was really young, but when I got to about, I think like seventh grade, eighth grade, I started listening to like grunge music and shit. And, you know, that whole phase. And I tried to play the saxophone. But I spit too much when I talk and I kept fucking the reeds up.
Yeah.
So my mom's like, nah, dude, you know, I have that sax. I think sounds fucking horrible anyway. So she got me a bass. She got me like a Fender bass and a PV amp, like that we rented them both from this place called Music Tree in San Martin. And that's when I first started like playing and like writing songs and stuff. So nice. I just kept doing it, you know?
Yeah. That's a good kind of low commitment way of doing it. So you rented it first, huh?
Oh, I thought he was just talking about playing the bass. I was like,
You're like, F you. Yeah. No, I mean.
All the bass players in the world right now, you motherfucker.
Yeah. No, just renting the bass though. Do you remember how much is that? Is that like.
It was like, I remember it was like $84 a month or something. And that was for like the whole combo, it was like the little PV, little combo amp and the bass, you know?
Right.
And it was like, funny thing is that I had a babysitter once. I can't say his name, but he was babysitting me a little while after that, and we were walking downtown, and we passed the Music Tree, and they had two doors. The motherfucker pulled a runner on two Ibanez basses with me in tow.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and then I just remember that story for some reason, that guy just running down the street, being all, come on. I'm like, what? Babysitter's fucking running with basses?
Grab them.
Get them. Fuck it. Let's go.
Well, so, okay. That's cool. So mom got you into the bass then, huh?
Yeah. Yep.
That's cool. And so what grade was that? You said like a little after seventh grade or something?
Yeah. I was like six, like in between like sixth and seventh grade, probably like that summer or something. You know, it's, so.
And was that because, I mean, I assume the saxophone like was school band or something. Was the bass more like this, you could practice this on your own, or we're going to get you a teacher or something like that?
Oh, no. They after the piano lesson debacle, they didn't do that anymore.
They're like, here's just an instrument. Do your own
thing. It's just like, we had this old house that had like a basement down in like a California basement, you know, it's just like dirt, like crazy. They don't build them up like the East Coast and shit, you know?
Right. We don't need them. Yeah.
I was like, oh, I thought it'd be, you know, in like sixth grade, I was like, it'd be a cool fort. My mom's like, you clean that fucking thing up, it's yours, you know?
Nice.
So, you know, a lot of Black Widows and stuff down there. It took me like a year to get it done, because I'd be down there for like 5 minutes and be like, fuck this, I gotta go.
Right.
But once I got that done, my mom just stuck me in the, like, she didn't like lock me down there, but she was like, yeah, that's your shit down there. Mm-hmm. Go down there, go play your bass, stay out of my hair, stay out of trouble.
Nice.
And that was that.
So was that the spot where, seventh grade, you're starting to listen to grunge music, you got a bass now. Did you like, and maybe you're at that point, you're skating and stuff too already.
Yep.
Did a couple other your friends grab like a guitar or something like that? And then when did you start saying like, hey, let's jam in this fort I got down here?
Yeah. Like really quickly.
Yeah.
There was like, I like calling some neighbor kids into like renting their own shit. I'm like, you're going to be the bass player. You're going to be the guitar.
Nice. Kid,
Damien was my homie. He was like super good guitar player for our age back then. And our friend Ryan and, Damien was, you know, he thought he was Kurt Cobain or something, dude. I don't know. He was pretty bad one time. We smoked some weed at band practice, and like somebody put on a strobe light, and he thought we were the devil. He called his mom and like wanted to go to the hospital, and like he blew the whole spot up.
Yeah, they're like, we're gonna put a little security camera down here in the basement now and watch you get.
Yeah, no, that was the beauty part of that, you know, like the early 90s was like, there were no security cameras.
Like,
you still get away with shit, you know?
I know. Not everyone had a camera on their phone, you know?
Not everybody had a phone. Like, you had like the house going, like the rich fucking kids, they'd have like their own personal line
inside
the room. Like, oh, I got my own phone number.
Yeah, you had to go through the parent gauntlet growing up. It'd be like, hi, can I talk to blah, 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 you know?
this kid, Peter, he got busted later on, like when we were in like ninth grade or 10th grade or something for doing just this thing. But he knew how to work phones back then. And he always had a phone in his backpack, and the cord was wrapped up and the end was split, like spliced out. It was like the blue, red, yellow, green four cords.
Yeah.
And wherever we were skating, he could go to like the back of the place and pop the little phone box, and he'd put it in there, and we'd sit there and call. And like the people would kick us out and be assholes. So he would plug into their phones and call 1-900 numbers on the business and just be like, oh, yeah, just talk dirty to me. And just put the phone down, skate for like 20 minutes, come back. And be like, I'll keep going.
That's hilarious. That's pretty epic. That's like a phone hacker.
That kid was epic. He's one of those people in your life, you know what I mean? It's just like when you're around that age, they just kind of like show up and then fucking bop and then just never hear from him again. You know?
And then ninja smoke bomb and you never see him again.
Well, you hear later on in life that he's like probably federal prison for doing some stupid shit. So
it reminds me of that kid from Terminator 2 who like plugs in the thing into the ATM and then he gets all the money for the arcade.
I guarantee that's where that motherfucker got that. Dude, I gotta do that somehow.
Yeah. So you got a spot, you got a base, you got your neighbors and your friends jamming. So where did it go from that? I assume you guys start, you know, saying, all right, this is our band name. Let's like try to do some house parties or shows. How did that progress?
I moved down to Hollister, California when we moved out of San Martin, and I met some other guys down there that were making music, and it was like, it was almost like a Sublimish band or something. You know, we were like 13, 14. That's what we did. We started playing local house parties, like out in the country at the sticks in like a barn and stuff, and just, you know, keggers and shit.
Yeah.
And then somebody's, you know, older sister was going to Isla Vista, you know, and so we got asked to play a house party down there on that like strip where like the cliff is, you know, or
nice.
Like,
back
then you just like got, like if you had your cup upside down. I don't know if it's still like that. I don't, you know.
Yeah. That's Santa Barbara, right?
Yeah, Santa Barbara.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, that's like a huge party street in Santa Barbara, just right next to the college there.
Yes, it is. And we were young, you know, like 15 or something.
Nice.
And we were psyched to be there. And some girl tried to take me home. My best friend runs down the street, and apparently she was hideous. And like, he runs down the street, and he turns me around, and he hits me. You know, what are you doing, dude? So you're not going with this fucking crazy chick. Like,
right.
You got to go back to Hollister tonight. Nah, I'm out of here. You know, he's all right, idiot. Wake up in the morning, you know, and just like that, like you open one eye, like, oh fuck, it's real, you know.
Yeah.
It was a very, I don't know, a nice way to say it. Just should have had the face of a mackerel, son. So, yeah.
And, well, you had a wild night, you know. So that's
it was good. It was so wild. In fact, I got my first trip to Planned Parenthood with chlamydia.
Oh no, Isla Vista. This will be there.
That's you, infomercial. Isla Vista. That's you.
Yeah. So you got some luck. You had some luck and some bad luck, but you had your first taste of some rock and roll, and then what happened after that?
Then we were in Hollister for a minute, and some shit went down there where. I leave, so I left town and I went up to Santa Rosa, and I lived up in Santa Rosa for like 5 years, and I skated for a skate shop up there called Brotherhood Skateboards.
Nice.
And just like met like-minded skaters and this dude DJ Aspect and Adam Thies from Jazz Mafia and stuff. Now I forget what his band's name was in, but it was a big ska punk band up in Sonoma County. And we just all started making hip-hop stuff together, and we just had like this little crew that made stuff, and we were playing, you know, we started playing in, you know, Santa Rosa, then Petaluma, then we're in San Francisco one night a week, three nights a week, playing at like, you know, Bruno's and these like weird little cutty jazz bars before they got fucked up. And and I was just doing hip hop, man. And me and this kid Dublin, we did a tour across the US to Chicago. We fucking opened up for like the Black Eyed Peas and shit.
Awesome.
We did some weird stuff.
And, that's a hell of a gig.
Yeah, man. I don't think even Fergie was with them. That was back when they were like semi-decent before they went just straight ape shit.
They were cool. They were really cool when they first came out. They're just different now. You know, they're pop now. They were like underground hip hop kind of style before.
Yeah, they decided to make money is what they did.
Sure, exactly.
I was just doing that today. I was over at my friend Chris's house. He got two little daughters. One's four, one's two.
Yeah.
And they're watching like this Snoop Dogg, Katy Perry video. Mm-hmm. Like the old one or something. And I'm just like, you just start watching it. And it's just like, oh, it's so overtly like over the top pop and sexual and shit.
It's
almost like if you smoke too much weed, you're like, they make this shit for children.
Yeah.
Cause you look over at the kids and they're just like hypnotized by all the fucking like that big ice cream cones and like,
exactly. Like, it's all like kids stuff, like candy and ice cream cones. And
yeah. It's all innuendo. I get it, but it's like, you know, it's just weird. Like that pop music, how much cheesy shit you got to put into it to make, you know,
totally. Yeah.
Maybe we'll try to call it cheesy.
Yeah, that sounds like Katy Perry.
101
California Girl. I think that's the one with Snoop Dogg in it, or California Girls, or something like that.
Maybe she's singing about a bikini or something.
He
like rolls some like magic dice at her ass.
No, I remember that one because actually I think one of the Beach Boys sued for more reasons than one, but I think one of the Beach Boys sued her for that song because Snoop Dogg actually kind of just, he does a wink and a nod to the Beach Boys, and he goes, I really do wish they all were California girls. And then, but that's a California Girl line from the Beach Boys song. So
damn, they got chicken.
They wanted a piece, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, Snoop Dogg was probably like, fuck that. Dude, I'm a Long Beach trip. Fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beach Boy.
I'm real California.
Yeah.
So, okay. So you were doing hip hop, and then you got some pretty rad gigs opening for Black Eyed Peas. So what happened after that?
I moved to San Francisco, and we were still doing hip hop stuff. I started doing stuff with this kid Edison, I'm actually working with on some side project stuff now. We just reconnected, and we were doing a trying to get like a Johnny Cash cover band set together for like this bar party. Uh-huh. And when we did it, we were playing, and it was like fun doing like punk rock stuff.
Yeah,
it was like my first taste of it. Uh-huh. And then our first band practice, Johnny Cash died.
Oh, wow.
So we aborted. We're like, yeah. No.
Right,
like,
right.
We can't continue this, dude. We're going to kill someone else. Like, this is horrible.
Yeah.
So then I moved into a spot called the Camputee with the members from this band called the Angry Amputees. Mm-hmm. And that was Stacey D's, one of her first bands, before she was in Bad Cop. And we all lived together. It was me, Eric Gonzalez, the guitar player, Stacey D. Jen was there for a minute, their drummer, and they just had a big jam room in the back of this warehouse, and I had my little hip-hop set up like that, you know what I mean? Like, well, off in the corner.
Uh-huh.
And then they had all their equipment, and then I just started fucking jamming with them, and then we started Louie and the Regals, mm-hmm. because Louie Regal was my rap name.
Okay.
And then we did Louie and the Regals, and then one weekend we played with Splitting Seconds and uh-huh. the Ballistics.
Yeah.
And that was Mikey, our guitar player now in Get Dead. Splitting uh-huh. Seconds was his band. Mm-hmm. And Tim and Tim and Scotty, the bass player and drummer of Get Dead, were in the Ballistics. So we had Splitting Seconds that, and then me and Moki were in, you know, Louie and the Regals. So happened out the next weekend, all of our bands broke up in the same weekend.
Ah, that's fun, huh?
Yeah, and we are all just like, oh, we met each other the weekend before. We're like, hey, what are you doing? You want to jam? And we all got together and didn't play an instrument. Just made a mess in Mikey's house. And,
yeah.
And then fucking the rest is here we are.
Yeah. So you basically just ended up hanging out that first rehearsal and just kind of...
Yeah, we hung out in Mikey's living room.
Yeah.
And we somehow got the idea to buy pineapples mm-hmm. and chop off the tops and then take a, like, you know, a serving spoon and hollow it out. And I made like a little pineapple goblet.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, we're all kind of buzzed already. And I was like, oh, if I put this gin in there, that's all you know what this pineapple needs more pineapple juice.
Yeah.
So we went to the store and got like those big like cans of Dole pineapple juice, poked holes in them. And then we're just making drinks like that and just get, you know, like gin tossed.
There you go. There's nothing more punk rock than a rehearsal that you don't even rehearse. you just drink.
Yeah, we drank enough that like Moki, our old guitar player, he's big. He's like a, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen Moki, but he's like 6'3" Chinese Hawaiian built fucking dude.
Uh-huh.
And we're wasted drunk. And I'm like, fuck with him. I'm like, ah. He just picked me up on my waist, uh-huh. turned me upside down, and just dropped me on my head.
Just pile drive you.
Fucking pile drive my ass. And that was my night, you know. I was like, fuck, I'm going to sleep, you know.
Poking the bear one too many times.
Yeah. And then we woke up and somebody agreed upon the stupid ass name of Get Dead in the morning time. That was that.
Yeah. I could see that waking up after those extreme pina coladas you were drinking.
Yeah. Are those pina coladas?
No.
I guess, yeah. No.
I'm just thinking pineapple mixed with alcohol.
Yeah.
Maybe. I'm with it. I don't know. I don't know what's in a pina colada.
Is this glass of pineapple? I think this glass is a pineapple, dude.
Oh, it is. This one looks like cranberry.
It is. I got that track infection still.
Still hasn't gone away. Isla Vista.
I'll never watch you.
So I assume eventually you guys got around to jamming a little bit and writing some tunes. How were some of those first sessions?
I don't remember. We were wasted. they were good. We came out. We did Josh Garcia was our drummer for a minute. And he was a drummer in Louie and the Regals before Scotty came in. And he worked at Hyde Street Studios in the Tenderloin in San Francisco, mm-hmm. which was awesome to work in because they've done some dope records in there. Like Santana's got this big, like, gold fucking plate that's got, like, some, you know, lore behind it of, like, when he came in and recorded there and, you know, the fucking 70s, he had a fucking pile of coke on there. And, like, Digital Underground did like Packet Man there.
Nice.
Tupac recorded his albums there. You know what I mean?
Cool.
So
yeah,
right outside the studio, you know, Souls of Mischief.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
There was some history there. But he worked there, so we got free studio time.
Perfect.
And we made a little four song. I think it was a four song EP called Forged in the Furnace of Rad. Mm-hmm. And it was just like a little hardcore-esque fucking little burner. We recorded it in 2 days, and
yeah,
then the next one he had to get money from us because we spent too much time, so he had to pay for it. Yeah. So this time we were like, fuck it, we'll just do it acoustic. Yeah. It was like less shit you got to plug in and less time.
Uh-huh.
Which was, in hindsight, sucks because still to this day, people like on our flyers and stuff, for some reason, I don't know if it's like our fault. I'm starting to feel like it is.
Yeah.
Maybe something is, there's a snafu in the fucking marketing department.
Yeah.
Because like it says folk acoustic punk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they think that we're coming to like play this album that like we made is almost like a lightweight joke. You know, and like they think like towards the beginning when we got signed on Fat, they thought this acoustic band was coming and it was gonna be right here, and we start pulling out fucking stacks and you're like, all right, what's that?
That's funny you mentioned that because even in your bio on Spotify it says, you know, it does mention, you know, the punk rock element, but then it also says kind of the Irish folk element as well.
Yeah, so. Irish folk element. Did you get that? You know, I feel okay, here's the deal. Anybody watching this?
Yeah.
I feel I need outside help because I feel that all my friends, my family, they got this joke. You know what I mean? And I've got this horrible speech impediment that nobody's telling me about. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
What do you hear when I say this, Ken? My name is Sam.
My name is Sam.
Okay, perfect. Every customer service person I get on the telephone, every cashier at a, you know, even a Safeway when it's like written there, they'll fuck it up. And they say Seth.
What?
And like Seth, and I've had friends like in the car. The other day, someone said the same thing. What? And then 2 days later, it happened in the car. I was like, on speakerphone with Geico.
Yeah.
You see what I'm fucking talking about? So I feel that there's this joke that I've got this speech impediment. You guys, I think you're in on the joke now because you said you sent me. And also, I have a thick Irish accent.
Okay.
You know, and I like to sing songs about caravans and horses.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you get connected with Fat Records? Like, was there a show going on or did you run into somebody? You have mutual friends? How did that happen?
Yeah, it was like mutual friends. Are that same guy, Josh Garcia, that worked at Hyde Street Studios.
Mm-hmm.
He's known the people in Fat pretty well. And he got a job working at Motor Studios as a sound engineer.
Okay.
And then later, Jeremy, our old guitar player, he was in there going on his internship for whatever fucking, I don't know what the school's name is or whatever, you know, the big Full Sail.
Right? Okay. Oh, Full Sail. Full Sail. Yeah.
So they were in there. They got this big screen to calibrate the board. And then when they calibrated the board, they needed to, you know, link it up. And so he was using this one's for Johnny, our video. Fat Mike had walked in. I was like, oh shit, what's this? And Josh was like, oh, there's like this thing that had popped off a couple weeks before that was a big stir up in like the club scene down there because we fought some bouncers.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone was pissed. The fucking promoter sent a letter to every club in the city. Well, these guys, the fucking bouncers, the bouncers were hitting fucking patrons.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And not breaking up a fight. They were fucking probably half drunk bouncers and they started hitting on kids. So he said, fuck that.
Yeah.
Hit one of them with a bar stool and then tied some like San Jose friends and it was a melee. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And that was that. And, you know, people got their feelings hurt. Now fucking we're getting blackballed.
But you got some punk rock credentials, I guess. Oh, that added to your resume.
Yeah. Check. So the promoter that did it happened to like not get along with Fat Mike so much. So Fat Mike was psyched on the story and he was like, oh, these are the guys. I really like this music. Let's meet him. And then the next night we met him at a bar in Noid Valley. And the night before we met him, I got into a scuffle in San Jose and I had this fucking horrible black eye. And he's like, oh fuck. He's like, you must be the singer.
He's like, you did it again.
Yeah. He's all like, okay, then at least you're on brand.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then he signed us right there in the bar. Like we had he bought us a couple rounds of beers and some shots. And we just talked about like what we wanted to do with music. And, you know, we've always come into it. For one, punk rock, this is like a second home for me. You know what I mean?
Sure,
like
I always feel like
I'm a visitor here.
Yeah. Because you love hip hop too. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like I always, since I've gotten into it, I've always tried to like listen to the older heads, more established heads, of like, how to move it, you know, because right. you don't want to make something that's like this crazy hybrid hip hop shit. And then you got a Limp Bizkit 2 on your hands.
Right. Right.
And it's just like, you know, and and what's even more scary is that shit might blow up.
Right.
You know what I mean? And now you're fucking sitting there at a fucking Mountain Dew Code Red fucking booth.
Right.
You know, getting breathed on by the Cheeto Monster.
Uh-huh.
So, but yeah, so we just always stayed open and told Fat Mike, like, you know, if you got ideas you want to try, fucking check it out. You know, we're willing to do shit, but we're also not going to do lame shit.
Yeah.
So if you don't get offended by us telling you fucking there's no way we're doing that,
uh-huh.
you know, and vice versa, then we'll have a good thing. And we shook hands and we've been on Fat Records for like 8 years now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean,
Fat and Mike I've made, knows what's up. I've made, hey, and I'm here to tell you, I've made hundreds of dollars.
All this time and yeah, and all that money. But well, that's awesome, you know. So, you know, as they say, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So
by
getting in a little scruffle with that that bouncer, you guys gained a friend in Fat Mike. Did he listen to your music prior to that meeting? What, you know, did he have I would think he didn't. I mean, I wouldn't have signed us.
But, you know.
right. I'm just wondering because
his hatred was just so much. Yeah,
it was like, purely spite.
Like he pissed off the whole label. Uh-huh. He pissed off fucking everyone else, you know. And like he's like, fuck, I don't care. And then he's so stubborn. Mm-hmm. He left us on for 8 years until we finally fucking made something semi good, you know.
Is that what happened?
I don't know. I mean, that's what it feels like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I listen to your guys' stuff. I think it's awesome. I think you know, as far as, you know, like I said, it does mention that there's a folk element on your bio. But then it says, you know, it's you got Swingin' Utters and NOFX kind of influence in there, too. And, you know, I don't know if that's because of Fat Records or if it's just because you guys like that type of punk rock or both. But it's awesome because I grew up listening to NOFX and I love it. And, you know, so I was bumping your stuff earlier today and I was getting hyped to talk to you.
Hell
so
yeah, man.
Good stuff.
Fuck yeah.
But I do hear a little bit of that, not like folk music, but like more of the, I do hear a little bit on in some of your tracks of that kind of like folk punk, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. It's like that, but yeah, like the early Against Me type shit.
Exactly. Or like the Irish punk music where it's not really folk. It's just punk rock with an Irish accent or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean? See, here we go with the accent. Yeah, shit. I know. You guys got to tell me, fool.
But see, you have it in your bio. So that might've pre-trained my mind.
That's in a bio.
Yeah. It's on your, let's see. Okay. I got your Spotify bio right here. So it says,
who's doing the fucking bios, boys?
This is what it says. While their tendency to draw from Irish folk and their stripped down sound were unique in their label, their gritty punk sensibility and party hardy attitudes aptly mirrored Swingin' Utters, NOFX and the like. So yeah.
Damn, who did this? That's super wordy. That's super wordy.
Yeah, it's pretty good though. I mean, yeah, like I said though, so I was conditioned to look for that element in it. Oh, okay. You know, so.
I see. Yeah, that's a good thing. That's good. That's actually a good angle to come in at. I'm gonna redo that bio.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna be like, you know, they draw all their inspiration from bands mailing them $100 bills.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's already in your head.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, it's like Howard Stern says, you just say something enough times and people will start to believe it. He's like, I just start
Howard
calling.
Howard Stern, you mean fucking Donald Trump?
That too. But yeah, Howard Stern said, I'm just going to start calling myself the king of all media. And that he just kept calling himself that. And then through the 90s, they started calling him that. So, yeah.
I just watched that movie on the plane the other day. It's fucking phenomenal.
Private Parts. Yeah, that was a pretty good one. I liked it.
Yeah.
All right, Sam. Well, it's been do you guys have any new music coming out this year? Because I know
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
You know, we have I'm working on a couple side projects with some friends.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm gonna try to put out. If anything, I'll just put it out on SoundCloud if like Pat doesn't want to do it. But I mean, I've got also a bunch of friends in Europe and stuff that have little small indie labels.
Uh-huh.
I like making like projects with people and then just making little like, you know, little 10-inch EPs and just having them. You know, I've always liked doing that shit. But Get Dead, we were talking about it because a lot of people kind of tripped out and were asking us, we were concerned about dropping an album during COVID
mm-hmm.
because you don't get to, you know, tour of that record. And
right.
That's when Striking Iron's Hot, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Then we thought about that. And what we thought was like, well, fuck that. We have a captive audience right now. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Like people, like new music comes out and it just gets, you know, just horfed up because people are working from home.
Yeah.
You know, like listening, putting your headphones on, especially if you got like, you know, you've been dealing with the kids all day or whatever, you know, your spouse comes home, you get that fucking 25 minutes to yourself.
Yeah.
Go outside, smoke a joint, put headphones on.
Yeah.
And I mean, I get stoked on anytime new music comes out. You know, I got like alerts now. I never did that shit in my life. Mm-hmm. I got alerts on my phone that if like certain artists drop anything, yeah. It's all boop, boop, and I'm just like, yep, bye, bye, bye.
Yep.
So what's a blessing with this curse, huh, is that when we do get to go tour, it's not going to be the normal thing where, you know, the band comes, they're touring a new record, but yet they only play 3 songs of that new record because no one knows the fucking record.
Right.
You know, you can't just go out there and smoke the whole album.
Right.
Because people, you know, people want to hear fucking what, you know, they need that nostalgia feeling. They want to fucking hear the song that they know and they like.
Yeah.
But this time, you know, it's flipped. It's like people are going to have at least, you know, what's it, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. We don't have anything on the books until May, June.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's 6 months of people listening to the album. And yeah. If people are digging it and they like it, that's going to be 6 months of them getting stoked. And then when you fucking release these beasts into the world to go to these shows and these festivals and shit, I mean, yeah, there's going to be a spike in COVID for sure. But like, it's going to be fun as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, that's, I mean, that's awesome. That's an awesome way to look at it. I think you're right with that silver lining. You get the audience has a longer time to get acclimated to the songs and get to know them. And then by the time you're touring again, they know them.
Yeah. And the album's only like, I think it's like 36 minutes long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can listen to it like 10 times in an hour.
Yeah, exactly. So we go probably only twice in an hour. So
yeah.
I don't mind. No, I'm just kidding. But no, like when we go like play clubs and stuff, it's nice because what we're doing is I'm still trying to figure out how to work this thing, but it's MPC One.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the new version of the MPC. And because if you listen to Dancing with the Curse, there's all these like undertones, like sub basses, mm-hmm. and little fucking like trippy samples and effects that go off.
Uh-huh.
What we're doing right now is we're getting that hourly practice studios, and we're going in there and we're learning how to do the album front to back, like to a T, of like how it should be done with the fucking all the triggers and stuff like that and the intros, so that we only need to play for, I mean, we feel that like, you know, 75 minutes of fucking one band is too much shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like when people like headline stuff,
right?
And it's just like, oh Jesus Christ, like fucking, uh-huh. You know what I mean? Two hours of this shit, like fucking going to see Sleep. It's just like 2 hours of one song,
uh-huh. Right?
So
right.
You know, we like to keep an hour is almost too much too. Mm-hmm. So it's like we don't like to do it over an hour. We do like the fact that this album is 35 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And if we put, you know, we could do the whole album front to back, and then we could put in like 4 or 5 like old songs, you know, just the fucking people want to hear it, call it out, and then, you know, 45 minutes, 50 minute set, in and out, done.
I agree, that's perfect.
You know,
I mean, especially for punk rock, but I agree. Sometimes I'm at a show, it's like once you're past like an hour, 15 minutes or something like that, it's like, dude, I'm ready to get a drink or go to the bathroom or you know.
Well, I mean, it's a hard part. I mean, that's a hard part about fucking being a performer. It's like it's easier to play in front of 5,000 people than it is to play in front of 50 people. Because with 50 people, you know what every motherfucker is doing.
Yeah.
And like right when you see somebody look at their watch or their fucking or their face glows up, you know you lost them.
Yeah.
And then once that happens, you start seeing fucking, it's like a fucking domino. It's all bop, 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 bop.
Yeah.
We lost it.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah, it messes with you.
Yeah, it's like people's attention span, especially in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we kind of want to try to release just digitally 3 new songs every like 2 months.
You know,
whether they're good or bad, we just make them and we do it. And then at the end of a year, you know, we'll have, you know, 12 songs or whatever we got. And then we can say, okay, were these ones, were people liking this enough for us to actually press it onto wax? and then fucking sling it. Because people just buy wax. I know at least 10 people that don't even have a fucking record player. Mm. And they buy fucking records. You know what I mean?
They they like to have something physical. Yeah.
Yeah.
The art, you know?
Exactly. Like, I mean, it's something tangible to fucking feel. They don't even open the record. They just hold the fucking record and then fucking, hey, Google, play fucking.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Alien the Stooges.
No, well, they're supporting you. They can hang it on the wall. They can frame it. I got some records hanging up, you know, but I do got a record player. But yeah, it's one of the coolest things you can actually still buy from a band. You know, you can get it signed. You know, it's a mini poster.
It is a mini poster. A mini poster that makes noise.
Exactly. Yeah. If you actually have the machinery to work it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's awesome. So when, it sounds like you're kind of tentative on whether or not you're going to do that. Do you know when we might expect the new tracks if this year?
What is it? It's November.
Yeah, that's we'll probably... almost November. It's October, mid October.
It's Saturday, right?
Tuesday.
What day is it?
I don't know.
I think that, you know, fuck that. It's fucking not even November yet. Yeah. I'm going to say that I'm going to put a goal out and try to get one track approved, recorded, and fucking dropped onto like, you know, YouTube or something on New Year's Eve.
Okay. Hell yeah.
You know, even if it's my dog just snoring, you know what
I mean? You should do it. New Year's Eve is perfect. At least you get you put out a track in 2020. You know what I mean?
The last, the last track.
You know there you mean? Go.
Do and it just like sample all the bad seconds. Shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. We got that to look forward to. So, hey, Sam, it was awesome talking to you, man. Super fun.
You too,
man. We like to end the podcast by asking if you had one piece of advice for aspiring artists, what might that be? I mean, you've had a interesting, you know, career. You've been doing,
this is a career?
Yeah. Hope so.
Damn.
Well, you've been a skater, you've been a hip hop artist, you're doing punk rock now under Fat Records. So I'm sure you have some jewels to drop on us.
Yeah. I would say that, it's more in the long run, it's more beneficial to be an asshole than a liar, you know?
Yeah.
And you can take that any way you want, but as a personal experience, like when you don't tell people what the fuck you want and what the fuck you expect in return for whatever the fuck you're doing.
Right.
And you just kind of like sugarcoat shit because you're worried about this or that. It's way worse in the long run than if you would have just been an asshole about it. Man, it's going to be harsh. And either decision sucks every time. You know what I mean? But personal experience, just go the asshole route. Fucking, you know, burn your fucking bridges, you know, versus just like trying to fucking, you know, put a little stick underneath it to hold it up.
Right.
It'll crumble, buddy.
Honesty. Better to be disliked for who you are than...